everyone, and welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast with me, your host, Justin Chisholm. This episode was recorded in Lisbon, Portugal, at the Volvo Ocean Races Boatyard Service Facility, where I chatted to Nick Bice, the race's Director of Boats and Maintenance. Nick has been involved in 5 Volvo Ocean races previously, as a boat builder, a shore crew, and as a sailor. And for the last edition in 2014 and 15, he set up and ran the Boatyard, a huge travelling shared services facility that maintains the Volvo Ocean Race fleet as it races around the world. Now for his 6th Around the World race, Nick has a new and pretty exciting responsibility, the creation from scratch of the new high-performance Offshore One design that will be used for future editions of the race. He calls it the Volvo Ocean Race Super 60, and he told me all about it. So here's the interview. I hope you enjoy it, and thanks again for listening. So Nick Bice, we're in Lisbon, Portugal, but tell us where exactly we are standing right now.
We're standing pretty much in the what was the refit facility. It's quite deserted at the moment, without any boats, obviously, but full of a lot of other equipment ready to go for the race, not to mention all the stuff that we've got outdoors getting ready, the boatyard tent, the team bases, the team storage containers, all the team ribs. It's all coming to a bit of a... it's becoming real, put it that way.
It certainly is. So just for the people listening, this is a kind of cavernous building. Obviously was a... I think it was a fish dock at some point, so it's a big, long room. And from where we're standing, I can see at least one mast on trailers here. It kind of accommodates all of this big kit that you guys are dealing with. So you've had boats in here to be sprayed, you've had boats in here to be refitted, and now all of those boats are sitting outside. And we're at the end of leg zero of the Volvo Ocean Race, so that's a bit of a misnomer. What's leg zero all about?
So we created leg zero for a few different reasons. The main reason for Volvo Ocean Race was to test all our systems. All the communications. What we didn't want is the boats going to sea and we're testing all the communications during the first leg. But on top of that, and a bit of a byproduct, is obviously a good test of the boats, good test of the teams, and good to get people into the habit of how they're going to start travelling around the world and just start really thinking that we're fully in race mode. One of the bonuses, of course, around the island race, the 4 of the boats got the world record around the island, so that was a really good. And you know, from the 4 stages of leg zero, it's been very successful on all manners. From a boat point of view, we're very happy with how the boats have gone. We haven't really heard anything as yet on any sort of breakages, so that gives us some pretty good confidence going into the race after the refit.
And that round the island race, that's round the Isle of Wight. It was during Cowes Week. The kind of sailing world's eyes were a little bit on Cowes Week. And that was just free publicity, wasn't it, for the race? Because we had helicopter footage of the boats blasting around in clouds of spray.
Yeah, it couldn't have got better. The conditions, well, to get the record, that's one thing. But the conditions themselves couldn't have been better to highlight that these boats have got some serious legs in them, absolutely.
What was interesting to me was that we had boats like CQS in it, which is a kind of oldish boat that's been refitted, but it's kind of one of the boats everybody's talking about at the moment. And they really struggled in those conditions just around the island, because although it's only 50 miles, there's some brutal seas around there, and they had breakdowns and they almost didn't finish that race, whereas our boats seem to just lap it up.
Yeah, I mean, built as a... Round the world boat, they obviously have an inherited strength about them. I think the only breakage on the day was an outrigger from one of the teams, which was just due to misuse. But to get the boats around in, I don't know, maybe it was 30 knots plus at times, in some pretty extreme conditions, was pretty awesome.
Because these boats have had a bit of a bad rep, haven't they? when you talk to the sailors, they all pine for the Volvo 70s.
And that's probably why they get the bad rap, because we were so spoilt in sailing the Volvo 70s. Yeah. But it doesn't take much to think back of what happened during that race in 11-12, how many failures there were, how many boats turned up to stopovers on ships. Unfortunately, the 65 does get a bit of a bad rap, but the reality is it has done perfectly the job. The design brief was hit exactly on the head. It was great. But one of the reasons, actually, is we have a lot of people say they're underpowered and they basically just heel over the whole way around the world. And that's caused a little bit due to the keel pin angle. So when the keel is fully canted, all it's doing is washing off riding moment. Unlike the new open or the Imoca boats these days that have something to counteract that with a lifting foil on the other side. Unfortunately, these boats just lean over a little bit more. Mm. But at the end of the day, they're still bloody quick boats and they still do the job perfectly.
Yeah, which they proved. So from the Isle of Wight, they then took on the Fastnet race. That Isle of Wight race was a sprint, right? 50 miles, they did it in under 3 hours, I think, was it?
Yeah, a bit over 3 hours.
Over 3 hours. So from that to the Fastnet race, I thought that was a fantastic move because, again, lots of people watched the Fastnet race. 370 boats, yep. I think, in the race.
I was in Gunwharf Keys, and I reckon every cafe, someone was sitting down watching the Facebook live feed on their phone.
Yeah, for sure.
Pretty cool. I've never seen such interest in a...
It was an incredible start. Hey? Yeah. I mean, that was a good thing. They watched and they got something pretty impressive. So the Volvo boats went away with the big boats, with the 100-foot boat and with Rambler 88 on a pretty tight start line where everybody was fighting for what's effectively the pin off the Royal Yacht Squadron.
Yeah.
And I was watching from the media centre on the feed and my palms were getting a little sweaty, I've got to say. What a spectacle. Good. That's, again, has got to be good for generating interest in this Volvo Ocean race.
Yeah, I mean, if that's one job that we need to, we just got to keep generating interest and not only for this race, but for the future of the race with some pretty big changes that we have on the table at the moment.
Well, we're going to come on to talk about that in a little bit. You must have tracked the Fastnet race.
Yep.
As I did, and it was damn close between all of the boats, even some of the new teams who we thought might be well off the pace. They went round in close formation, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the finish was within 40 minutes of each other after all that racing, which is pretty. I've done Sydney Hobarts with a bunch of TP52s, and you finish in 6 or 8 hours difference.
Yeah.
And here we have the 65 finishing within 40 minutes difference. Yeah. Yeah. And at any which time, at any sked, someone else was leading the pack. I mean, I'm not surprised that Matt Fra and Dong Fong were at the front, but to see the other teams, some of which who haven't done any sailing at all, be so close is pretty encouraging that they're going to be on the pace pretty early.
And an incredible finish in the dark in Plymouth with Matt Fra just edging out Dong Feng by less than a minute. I think it was like 58 seconds.
Yeah.
After 600 miles, a couple of days of yacht racing.
And we saw some finishes like that during the last race as well. Just in those last few miles that someone edges ahead, or they boats finish within literally minutes of each other after thousands of miles. So we're probably going to see that once again.
I think we are. Close at the front, close in the whole fleet. The rest of Leg Zero kind of went according to plan, a race through the channel over to St Malo, and then a race from St Malo down to Lisbon. Ended up getting shortened because I was sitting here in sweltering heat and the gentlest of breezes, but I think that was the right decision.
Yeah.
So now Leg Zero is over. What can it tell us, if anything, about the form guide, Nick? You know this race better than most people.
Well, the form guide, not only with the boats themselves, but with all the other things to do with the boats, with how the boatyard works, with how all the communication works back in HQ, how race control works. Everyone's going to go away and have a little debrief and see, okay, what can we do better to make sure we all hit the ground running when it comes race time. As for the form guide, I've always had Matt Fray and Dong Fong at the top of the list. I mean, it's theirs to lose at the end of the day. They've been on the water the longest. They know the boats the best. AXO's going to be strong, got some really solid guys and a good mix, I think, between youth and experience, and see Brad and Yocca and those guys there, and And the guys like Nikolai and Simeon, of course, they're only going to bring, you know, the need for speed. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be really interesting. Then, of course, Vestas 11th hour. I mean, we can't forget them. They won the last stage of this league. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of experience. They've got due to last race, a lot of experience with the boat. Tony Mudder's come back into the race.
They seem really hungry, don't they? Those guys seem really hungry for it. Yeah.
And so, of course, we're expecting those four, and of course, you add Brunel into the mix.
Yeah.
Basically, they hadn't sailed the boat prior to Round the Island race. Mm-hmm. It was literally delivered up to Round the Island.
Yeah.
And they finished this whole leg zero in third position.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's whenever someone like Bao Becking jumps on a boat, he's going to make it go fast. And then, of course, with the addition of Pete on board, it's going to be one to watch.
So Peter Burling, obviously. We've got Peter Burling and Blair Tuke, his 49er crew, so fresh from the America's Cup. Gold medal still clanging around their necks.
They might have got caught in the pedestals.
But that's, I mean, they're sailing on different boats. One of them has the potential to do the triple, right? The Olympics, the America's Cup and the Volvo all in one cycle, almost.
Exactly. So that'll be interesting. I wonder what the book says in New Zealand on those.
That could be really interesting. How difficult do you think it's going to be for somebody like Peter to come from steering that super fast America's Cup boat that's flying around in Bermuda to the Volvo boats? As quick as they are, it's a very different beast, isn't it? It's a different mode to be in.
Much different, but the fundamentals are all the same. I mean, Pete and Blair, they grew up, like I say, standing up in a boat to sail. Whereas I grew up with my sitting on the side of a laser type thing. But the fundamentals are the same. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Pete, and I've sailed with a lot of dinghy guys in big boats, and the minute they're on the helm, they're good.
Right.
They're going to be good. I'd say they would excel hugely in downwind sailing as well, and knowing how to apparent wind sailing, which they've grown up doing a lot of apparent wind sailing. So they're going to be super quick, and they're used to it. And, I mean, it's going to be really good to see how these top-end drivers, how far they push these boats.
Yeah.
And these guys will do it, absolutely.
Got a little forklift truck going by. Somebody's still working today.
He might be going to get the beers.
Sounds good. So, yeah, I wonder whether people like Blair and Peter Burling will, you know, maybe bring a new dimension to how we sail these boats, because they are one design. The only thing that's going to make a difference out there is how the guys sail the boat, the guys and the girls sail the boat. So they could just revolutionise something.
Absolutely. Right? And regardless of the actual boat and what the boat sailed in, one thing we're trying to really do in the race is inspire people. And to inspire people, they need heroes to look up to. And there's no better heroes right now than Blair and Pete. Mm-hmm. And I mean, New Zealand stopover will be massive for those two sailing in through the head.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to be part of the early, well, kind of late in Dalton's era in Volvo world, but with Grant Dalton on board, the town just went nuts.
Yeah.
Thinking when Pete and Blair come through,
that's right.
It's going to be like, well, maybe we could ask if we can chuck the cup on board to do another tour.
Little stealth marketing. I like that. I like that idea. But yeah, I mean, this is a race for heroes that creates heroes, and it's a race that every sailor I talk to and every skipper I talk to, they always say, when I was a kid, I watched the Volvo Ocean Race boats somewhere, wherever it is in the world, almost to a man. And even the young guys now are talking about races that are only a few cycles ago. It's a race that inspires people, isn't it? And it's very different to anything else. It's not the Vendée Globe.
No.
It's not trying to be the Vendée Globe. How many times have you done the race?
So I've sailed in the race twice before.
Yeah.
Worked as a shore crew twice before. Did the last race running the boatyard.
Yeah.
And now, so about to go into my sixth.
Right.
So
this is good. This race got hold of you, huh?
Well, still wondering what I'm going to do when I grow up.
Well, that's right. But I mean, for you, what is the magic of it? Because it's not a race that happens every year. We have to wait for it to come.
No, and being in the position that I'm in now, I feel I have a responsibility to ensure that we have a platform that creates the heroes, that gets the young kids ready to really want to do this race, to be inspired by the race. And I'm fortunate enough to be in this position to try and make sure that does happen, and that's with the development of the new Volvo Super 60.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we're seeing a revolution in mono hull sailing just going on, and it has been just only for a few years now with this new foiling technology.
So that what we're talking about here is the boat for the next race, not this coming edition. The Volvo Ocean 65s will be retired in favour of this new design. So, yeah, Nick,
yeah.
What can you tell us?
The Volvo Super 60. So, as I was saying, there has been a revolution in the last few years, and we've seen the Omoka, well, typical, the French really embrace it and do very well at it. And they've created some fantastic boats, some boats that have inspired people. The footage of Bank Pop and Hugo Boss in the Southern Ocean, it's got to be the most viewed footage, yeah. Sailing footage ever.
Yeah.
It must be amazing.
Yeah.
So, in saying that, we were a long way down the track before that even happened. But basically, we went to some very well-known designers, and we asked them to come to us with two designs. One, which was completely blank sheet of paper, and another that has the potential to be converted into an Omoka boat, just to see where we'd get to. So probably out of the six that suppliers, four of the boats looked relatively similar, mm-hmm. which were either a 65-foot version of what you call an Omoka boat, up to 70 was kind of the longest. And then of course, talking about the conversion and whether that would happen. And it actually took a while to really see how that was going to work, and it definitely wasn't at the top of our list, and it was just something that we thought can or can't be done. So as we refined it, we invited the designers to just have a face-to-face meeting with them all, just to see where they're at, what they really thought about it. Guillaume Verdier, who at the time was working for Team New Zealand, he couldn't make the face-to-face meet, so I actually went over to New Zealand and spent 24 hours with him.
Right.
Went to his house, had a beer, we went out to dinner.
That sounds terrible. You had to do that?
Well, that's terrible. That's part of the job, yeah. I stayed at his place, we had breakfast the next, and just to talk about and what his thoughts were, and to tell you the truth, within 5 minutes I knew he was our bloke.
Right.
He was our guy, he was surrounded by some great guys. He had been, well, obviously being French, he'd been and part of the VPLP design studio for a long time, being part of a lot of designs on both on Mocha World, Multi-Hull World, being the designer of Comanche, of course.
Yeah.
And just his attitude, and maybe that's working with the Kiwis long enough to to make him pretty easy to get along with.
Right.
So we ended up with a boat, his perfect Volvo Ocean Race boat, which was driven a little bit by the draft, which we are around the world for the harbours that we go into.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. We restricted the draft to 4.8 metres, mm-hmm. Which essentially drove us to a boat that was around about 62 feet long.
Okay.
But when you looked at it on paper, it looked pretty much exactly the same as what an Omoka boat does. So then that got us thinking a little bit more. If we just reduce the length by 2 feet, so it does have the ability to go into Omoka boat, whether it does or doesn't, that's not really the driving factor here. But what it does do, gives that boat another life outside of the Volvo Ocean Race or in between editions. Route de Rums, TJVs, Vendée Globes, who knows. And they've got 30 or 40 of these boats sailing around. So yeah. It'd be a pity to have a 62-footer sitting on the dock that looks pretty much exactly the same and to try and explain to the general public that they can't sail against each other because that one's just a little bit longer.
And there's a kind of sustainability angle here as well, isn't there? We build, you know, we all like to talk about our sustainable teams and races and events, and yet we build these boats that sometimes we see these massive America's Cup boats that end up just getting shot to pieces.
Oh, and they sail for one hour a day for 4 days, and then they chuck them away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why the 65. Yes, we did build one brand new one, but we've got seven boats that have already done 70,000 miles.
Yeah, it's the ultimate recycling, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we ended up with the what we're calling the Volvo Super 60.
I like the name, that's
which
good.
I came up with that myself.
Good one, mate.
I haven't told the board yet. But, but the with the only thing is it's 60 feet long, so it can go to a mocker. We'll have our own keel system on it. We'll have our own keel. We'll have different rudders. We'll have a different rig. We'll have different sails. And all those elements will be swapped out if you ever get the chance to convert it to one mocker boat.
So this is not a compromise boat. This is a boat that's built.
No compromise. And well, we've always thought that we'll go down the path, and when we approach things that seem like a compromise, we then either make a call that we tack one way or the other. So far, we haven't found anything that we think is a compromise. So it's going to be pretty cool. This it's going to have the Dali type foils on it, with trim tabs on them. It's going to have a trim tab on the keel fin, because we're not restricted by any rules, so we're allowed to do this.
So that's brand new technology,
Have an elevator on the rudder as well. So the potential for the whole thing to be flying is definitely definitely there.
Flying as in the way we see these little Transat boats that are fitted with foils, flying like that?
Yeah, I don't think we'd ever, in any Southern Ocean, ever see that.
Yeah.
But, which is also part of the, I mean, they're pretty extreme boats, but we need to also think about if you're so reliant on a foil and a foil breaks, because you're pretty much taken over about 13 metres of the ocean here, width-wise, we still need the boat to be rather competitive. So the boats themselves will be, with a broken foil, will still be able to sail to port competitively because the boats will be wide enough, generate enough riding moment off of their hulls.
In the same way that Alex Thompson got around the world second place with with one wing. Yeah,
I mean,
one,
it, one foil. Who knows? That I'm sure someone's going to do it soon, but there'll be some sort of real skinny mono hull that can race around inshore fully foiling.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's going to be pretty cool, and we're fully in the throes.
Sail plan?
Sail plan. You walk down a dock and look at an old mocker boat, and you're like, holy shit, we don't need a rig much bigger than that.
Right.
Southern Spars are designing the rig with North Sails. Working with them. What we do want to do is probably reduce the amount of sails. We don't want, we'd rather less than more. So they're looking into, you know, maybe we only have five or six sails compared to the seven or eight that we have now. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, there's still a lot of boxes to tick. We don't have a lot of answers yet, but we have a pretty general idea of where we're going.
How many will you sail it with?
Still up for debate. It'll have the ability, if you look at it from a practical point of view, to be sailed with eight, even more if you want to put people on the leeward side. So it's going to be between five and eight, I think. With five, six, seven, you're short-handed anyway. So that's something we've got to think about. We've actually got Ray Davies from Team New Zealand working as a bit of a sailors liaison. Unfortunately, due to the timeline, because this next starts in 2019, we don't really have much time to host open forums on how we should do things. So Ray spends a lot of time to speaking to sailors individually, getting their input, sailors who've been involved in Volvo world, sailors who've been involved in Omoka world, multi-hull world, to try and really bring it all together.
And what's the honest reaction of these guys to it? I mean, it would be easy for you to tell me that they all love it, but I mean, knowing the sailors, they'll always have an opinion.
So when the concept was first put on the table, there was a lot of people thinking that there would be a compromise both ways. A Volvo Ocean Race boat would be compromised. A iMocha boat would be compromised. And once... But in saying that, that's probably due to... That's the first thing on their mind. Whereas we've been studying this for 6 months and we know at the moment that there is no big compromise. So once I explained to them the concept and how we ended up at 60 feet, and if you built the 70-foot version, you can kind of predict the loads on a computer, but no one's done it yet.
Yeah.
So We're talking bigger foils, we're talking bigger wind. Like, no one has literally done it. Whereas the Omoka boats, they've been doing it now for the 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is. And we know how they behave in real conditions. And we can apply that to how we design and build our boats.
And of course, Guillaume is right at the heart of all of that development and technology.
And not only Guillaume, what we've done is set up a Volvo Ocean Race design team, which is, I guess, very similar to an America's Cup team. We have great individuals from different areas. So Nick Holroyd is part of the team, ex-design coordinator for Team New Zealand, ex-SoftBank Japan. Guillaume, of course, is lead naval architect. Pure from New Zealand, doing all the structural engineering. A lot of input from Persco, who are going to be the lead contractors. Got Stefano Beltrano from QI Composites for quality control. I mean, so we've got the best of the best.
Yeah.
And that's been our whole outset. You know, if we can't sit around a table and come to a decision together, we don't do it.
Yeah.
But with those, when I wake up at 3 a.m. just totally shitting myself about what we're doing, but then I'm on the phone to Nick Holroyd, and you actually like, hang on, we got some real smart bastards here. This is going to be good. So,
what might it be capable of in terms of mileage? That's what people want to know. How fast is it?
So we're just running some. If this interview was a week later, I'd probably be able to give you some real numbers around the world compared to a Volvo 70. On Mocha Boat in 65, so we're just running those routes now. I mean, but put it this way, the way Guillaume sees it is it is a step on from the Bank Populaires, the Hugo Bosses. So the other day on the Solent, Alex on Hugo Boss was sailing with three guests and they're doing 33 knots across the Solent. So it won't be hard, I wouldn't think, in flat water to be doing 35 knots, fully foiling. Offshore, who knows? Let's see. But they won't be a rental car in the sense that just push them as hard as you can and hope like hell.
Yeah.
There will be limits, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not to the extreme that we don't want boats turning up to stopovers on ships, but if you push it past the limit, you've got potential to lose that leg. So, and that's something that I'm happy to bring back into the race, like a bit of seamanship as well.
Yeah.
Like, finish first you must finish.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we're seeing the push towards more of the traditional Volvo Ocean Race sailing this time with the more time down in the Southern Ocean. We're all excited about that. But I'm just wondering, with this foil technology, we saw problems in the last race, few boats pulled out with having hit things. Alex broke a foil. You know, one of the top French guys was out. Sebastian Joss was out with a broken foil system, you know, and he, at the time, basically said, this is not ready yet, like, this doesn't work yet.
Exactly.
So, what's your thoughts around that?
And that's one of the reasons, also, why we stuck to this 60-foot length, because we are learning. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel by going bigger with more loads. So, the thoughts behind that is it's evolved and developed a lot very quickly. And we're going to take as much of that technology as we can. We want to partner with some of the existing teams to learn what they've learned. And, of course, the people who are part of the Volvo Ocean Race design team are right on the cutting edge of it. So that's why they are fully involved. And hopefully we can mitigate that. I mean, it's never risk-free. But if we can mitigate it by being smart with who we use, who we employ, what tools we use, it's never risk-free, but hopefully we can mitigate as much as we can.
Yeah, that's interesting, because Volvo are very much a safety-driven company, as lots of companies are these days, but Volvo particularly with their reputation. So what was Volvo's reaction to what you were trying to do?
Well, during the launch, actually, of this whole project, Mark Turner, he was still a fan of going multi-hulls. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call it more of a purist, but more than happy to stick with the mono hulls. And you could almost argue that maybe
there he goes. He
must have just must have dropped the beers off. But you could argue with the between the multi hull and mono hull that this day and age and what we've seen with the monohulls, I mean, they're pretty extreme boats compared to a multi-hull these days. Like, you can design and build a multi-hull that will never flip over, but there is that risk. And if you flip a multi-hull over, the chances of getting to the finish line are pretty slim. Yeah. Whereas you can have a broach in a monohull, you're going to get back up, you're going to go, you'll be fine. You can break a fall, doesn't matter, the boat's still going up, it's going to make it. So yes, but explaining to Volvo that we are going to be sticking to as or as much as we can to the safety standards that we've had in the past. If there are areas that the safety standards are lower, we'll assess that together. In saying that, though, those safety standards were written into a rule which was it's over 15 years old now, and let's face it, the technology has come a long way also since then, especially in how you predict things, the way the boats are built, especially what was learnt from when these first falling boats were launched in TJV.
Yeah.
And we just need to embrace all that and be pretty open-minded with how we do that. That's why I've developed that Volvo Ocean Race design team with some pretty cool heads there.
And it's important, is it, to realise that Volvo, the company, own this race. They don't sponsor it. So this is really why you guys can do what you can do. Once you get their buy-in to these kind of...
I mean,
I don't want to call them crazy ideas, but I mean,
they're brave, right?
Very fortunate position
to
be able to do this.
Yeah.
Huge, huge project.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to ensure they're happy still. But at the same time, if I can personally get all the sailors excited in this race, this is the thing they have to do. That's what I want to try and achieve.
Yeah.
And I think I'm sensing that that's happening. I showed a few drawings to Charles Cavillier of the new boat, and I could see on his face that he's getting excited.
Yeah.
I shook hands with Tony Mutter just before Fastnet, and he said one of the main reasons he's back is the path that we're going down with these boats. So from that point of view, I get the feeling we're heading in the right direction. It won't be validated until we get the boats on the water launched successfully and sailing around the world.
How many can you build in time?
We can build 8 that can compete in the Volvo Ocean Race. And that's our vision for at least the 2 editions, maybe the 3rd, that we remain in control of 8. But maybe we're going to keep building more. Maybe some Omoka team might buy number boat 9, boat 10 to race in the Mondo.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just see how that pans out.
Interesting.
I mean, but that's not part of the business model to sell any boats at all.
You're not going into the boat production?
No.
Other than
football. The amount of interest out there, though, we probably could to an extent.
Well, that's kind of what I feel like. I feel you might create something where you're going to have people, teams scrabbling for these boats, you know?
Yeah.
And equally, it would be nice in a couple of races' time to see, you know, maybe 10 or 12 of 12 of these big teams back in the Volvo Ocean Race, back, you know, a little bit like the old days.
Yeah. I mean, we're shaking up a lot. We're shaking up the format a little bit. We want to shorten the race a bit so it's a bit less pressure. We want to offer more on-water activity to all the stakeholders, all the stopovers.
Mm-hmm.
We want to get as many people out on the water as we can. I mean, there's a lot of... since the launch of the offshore boat and the introduction of the new falling boat inshore, there's been a lot of pushback from people. But in saying that, it's the right tool for the right job.
Yeah.
Like, to sail a pure dedicated offshore boat on a 1 mile windward lure,
it's
not the right thing. And in this day and age, to sail a falling multi-hull within sight of the guests or sight of the public, that's being done and very successfully.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a bit of a road to go down to exactly how that's going to work, whether it's at every stopover, whether it's just at 3 key stopovers, we don't really know yet. But we've definitely got the consideration of the sailors, how they deal with it, whether a specialist cat sailor comes in. I mean, we don't know that yet. It's going to be interesting to see what the cup comes out with in September, the protocol.
It feels like an exciting time for professional sailing, doesn't it? And that means it's an exciting time for sailing fans. We've got the The Volvo Ocean Race moved into a two-year cycle. The Cup nearly moved to a new two-year cycle. Now it doesn't look like that is going to be the case. Yeah. But
it'll be no clash with the Volvo, which is good. Yeah. No clash with the Olympics, no clash with the Mondo.
Yeah.
So it's about... I mean, I've been talking to some guys in New Zealand about, having something in New Zealand. And what we want to do and where we go, we don't want to be in opposition to anything. We want to complement what's already going on in the world. And if we can do that amongst Volvo, IMOCA, America's Cup, the Olympics, if we can do that, sailing's only going to get better, only going to get stronger. And I feel we actually have a responsibility. That's what we need to do.
So you've made me think of something that I was going to ask you earlier on in the conversation. You talked about how lucky you were to have become part of this race. I know the one question I get, because I'm kind of associated with this race in a different way to you, but I get a lot of young sailors contacting me through Facebook or email and saying, I need to know how I get into this race. How do I set my stall out to do that? And, you know, I worked with Ian Walker with Abu Dhabi in the last race, and he was very clear about it, is, you know, do lots of sailing, you know, sail as many boats as you can and try and present yourself, you know, it's almost that dress for the job you want, not the job you've got right now.
Yeah.
I guess you have your view on it, but the race is kind of going to help with that a little bit, isn't it, with the academy stuff that it's going
to
do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need to leave some sort of a legacy around the world when we go. We don't want to go there and just put up our nice team bases and nice tent and then leave and there's absolutely nothing left. If we can leave something that gets the kids engaged, so next time we come back, who knows? They can be part of a shore crew in that little. And then next stopover, next time the race comes back again, maybe they join the race as a shore. Then next thing you know, they're sailing. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got into it. I went and built the Amos sports boats. Then I joined as a shore crew. Kind of gave up my own sailing at that point in time to do that, knowing that it could lead into something further. And then in the next edition of the race, I was sailing.
Yeah.
So you've got to break into the circle, and it's a bit of a cliche, but the boat that and I'm a bit different from Ian in the sense that he's come through the whole system from a sailing point of view, where I came through from sailing and a bit of a trade background as well, mm-hmm. and applying that second skill, which is very important in Volvo Ocean Race as well. Mm-hmm. So you don't get to take it back to the shore crew every night. And I kind of say the boat you work on is your business card at the end of the day. If someone walks down a dock and knows that guy down there or that girl down there is a super hard worker, why don't we take a look at him, her, whatever it is? But all the other secondary skills, I mean, sailing, you need to still be good, of course, but the secondary skills to me is also something that you need to really have.
Sail making, boat building,
rigging, I mean, even safety. I mean, first aid certificates, all that sort of thing. Mm. Not be afraid to get your hands dirty and get into it and be good at your trade, which does include sailing.
Yeah, that's good advice. And here's my other question. I know you're fairly active on social media, and whenever the Volvo announces anything, there is a huge reaction on Facebook and Twitter and various other places around the forums. How much of that do you guys look at, pay attention to?
Yeah, I try and...
People are not complimentary all the time, are they?
No, not at all. And personally, I try and answer some of the forums just due to a lot of the time it's a little bit of miseducation. For example, there was a lot of pushback that the new Super 60 would not be used used for fans or public to see during a stopover, and they'd just go in the water and they'd go off sailing in. But the reality is they're still going to be used for pro-am racing. They're going to be used for some sort of a coastal race, which will be much more complementary to the boat as opposed to a windward 1 mile windward lure, which, you know, where we're standing here, if you've got 20 knots, you're going to see these boats flying up and down the river falling, which is going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
So whereas the people who are riding all the bad points, they don't understand that that's going on. So I try and update, and I try and let them know that we're all in this game together.
Yeah.
We're all trying to strive to get the right thing.
And it's rewarding, isn't it? It's rewarding with when you do post something on social media that's about the Volvo, you generally get a big reaction. And that must be nice when you're working for that race to realise that people care, like people give a damn about this race.
Yeah, and people know the race. I mean, I've listened to a few podcasts, and even Dennis Connor the other day was talking on his podcast. It's pretty cool, and talking about the new boats. And there's a lot of hype at the moment on social, on print media, that there's this rumour that the new America's Cup boat is going to be what the Volvo boat is. And that's a
good one.
So, don't know, but our lead designer hadn't told us that yet.
You might have to have a look at his contract if that's what he's done.
Might just take the bowl off and see what happens.
So the new rumour is that the boat for the Vendée, the Volvo and the America's Cup is all the same designer. That's perfect, yeah.
Well, we didn't hear it from me.
So, Nick, your role in this race now, we're, 9.5 weeks away from the start of the race. You're obviously spending quite a lot of time on the next race with the new boat. But what else, what happens now within Volvo as we wind up to October 22nd when the boats will head off from Alicante and actually come here in Lisbon at the start of the 2017-18 edition?
So, well, 12 months ago when Mark Turner first started, after his first day, he rang me up and said, "What happens if you get hit by a bus? Who's going to replace you? Because I want you to start working on the future of the race and the strategy," which I have been doing now for the last 12 months. So straight away, it was pretty obvious who could take over my role as running the boatyard, and that's Coxie. We've worked together for a long time.
So that's Neil Coxie. Tell people who don't know a little bit about Coxie's background.
Neil Cox, so him and I have actually been in the race for the same amount of time. He's coming up for his sixth. Boat builder by trade also. Some people call us cousins. We won't let on whether it's true or not just yet. But he was my best man at my wedding, actually.
Right.
So, I mean, it was just the perfect guy for the job, and we work in the same manner and got the same principles. So he fits right in there. We've actually managed to maintain all the key guys in the actual boatyard. So during that process, the last 12 months, been working obviously on the strategy a little bit for the future, and now really getting stuck into the new boat. Coxie's been running the refit, which all the boats are out of now. Leg zero's finished though. We've got 5 on the dock here. Well, 4 actually. One's up in Cascais and 2 are in San Chento. And we've opened up a window now that the 65s can do 2-boat testing. So they can go off and do what they want. A lot of will sail out of here and be supported by us, supported by the boatyard. And then come September the 18th is what we call the assembly period. At that time, every boat will be lifted out the water. It'll be, they'll be 100% all with corrector weights put in them to ensure that they're 100% one design. All the technicians will come down and work on the boats as like a normal stopover for their final service before the race starts. And that's a 2-week process. Rigs are out, do a lot of weighing, making sure, equalising, ensuring everything's 100%. Boats are in the water for a week from, I think it's the 31st, and then they would do the prologue, which is from Lisbon to Alicante. In Alicante for 2 weeks, with one of the weekends being inshore race, and then the final weekend with the leg start from Alicante to Lisbon on the 22nd, and they come back here to Lisbon, actually. And we're here just for a short period, just to shake any cobwebs, which is, I mean, there's a whole nother backstory to why Lisbon's earlier in the race as opposed to later, and no, I don't think anyone would believe me if I told them it's got to do with the tides in Cardiff when we go there.
Is that right?
Anyway.
It's all Cardiff's fault. Okay.
It's another story.
All right.
But then they're out of here and on their first ocean leg heading down to Cape Town.
That's fantastic. And the boatyard itself goes on the road as well, right? That's the thing that I think is the most amazing part of all this.
Boatyard goes on the road. We've got a tent which is 80 metres long, which houses all our workshops, the sail loft floor and all the team workshops. A little dissimilar to last race, where the teams were responsible for their own workshops within their own team-based area. But we've tried to really lift the quality of the team bases. No longer it's a shitty old white tent tucked down the back.
Yeah.
It's now something right in the public's eye.
Yeah, they look great.
And they are going to be really cool.
Yeah.
And we've put the team-based team workshops within the boatyard tent, so all the technical work happens in one area.
Yeah.
You don't want to be bringing guests down to you, to your team base, and someone's out the back repainting a rudder or something like that. So or
grinding something,
We think that's gone in the right direction. And then this facility here, well, we hope that, you know, this we have a future.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a pretty big job on our hands once this next edition of the race finishes, and that is to fit out 8 new Volvo Super 60s.
So it rolls on. Nick, it's a pleasure talking to you. It's great to have somebody as excited with the race as all the fans are and as I am as well. So
yeah.
Thanks a million, and we'll maybe check in with you during the race.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.